I'm Robin Amler of IBS Intelligence. You're listening to the IBS iViews podcast. I'm joined today by Richard Graham, Director of KYC and Financial Crime for Moody's Analytics. $2.6 billion. That's the amount stolen from unsuspecting victims last year. A staggering tally behind the rising, and I don't really want to say this, but pig butchering crypto scams. Perhaps we can dispose of this first, Richard. What do you mean by pig butchering?
Pig butchering, actually, the term is a media term. It's derived from the scammers. Actually, the preference that I have and some in the industry have is to really start calling it financial grooming scams. And the reason we call it financial grooming scams is because it's insulting to the victims, right? They're being referred to as pigs, and fattened up is sort of the way the scammers look at it. So what this financial grooming scam is, it's really a combination of human trafficking, oftentimes, but not always, cryptocurrency scams with a romance twist.
You actually got a whole range of things going on there. You mentioned human trafficking. You mentioned grooming. You want to refer to it as financial grooming. And that opens up a whole extra can of worms all by itself. You mentioned romance scams, but there's identity theft. All this is a threat, not just to the individual, but to the organizations as well.
There's a significant number of individuals that are human trafficked into these conditions, right? The UN estimates about 220,000 people are tricked into taking jobs in Southeast Asia, where all they do is send messages all day, every day, to try to get some engagement. So that's the romance angle. They're trying to build rapport. But that's also the human trafficking angle, because these are individuals that have been convinced to come overseas and do this level of scams. They're also using identity theft in a way, because they're using fictitious pictures, right, of, you know, oftentimes models and very attractive individuals, where they're sending these messages to try to establish rapport with the victim over a myriad of social media channels, text messaging, you name it.
And the next step, obviously, is I need help, send me money.
It is actually not often the next step. The next step is often just trying to learn as much about the victim as they possibly can, right? They will eventually ask for money. But I actually spent some time going through the scam myself to really, really, really understand it. And it's exhausting, because they want to spend a lot of time with you. They want to really learn about your children, your family. What do you do for work? What I was surprised by is going through the scam is it took a couple of weeks before they started to tell me that, you know, they are very successful and they mention crypto, but they don't actually ask for money until I'm going to imagine a couple of months into the scam as they build that rapport.
Is it specifically something that is about crypto fraud, or does it involve ordinary money as well?
Yeah, it can involve ordinary money. It often does involve crypto. It's not always crypto, and it's not always even legitimate crypto. Sometimes you're just on a fake website or a fake app, and you're wiring money, right, to somebody thinking you're getting crypto. So it's an organized criminal group, or more. There's a lot of organized criminal groups that are doing this, so they have different methods. And every time, you know, money is kind of clawed back, right, by law enforcement, right, they might change some of their tactics. Oftentimes it is crypto, but it can be other methods as well, as we've seen.
All right, let's go back to basics. If I'm a financial institution, what are the red flags? What are the risks I should be looking out for and I should be telling my customers to be looking out for?
So I've done a lot of research into this topic. And one of the things I think that's interesting is FinCEN published, I think it's 15 red flags to say, here's what to look for. What I find the most valuable flag personally is, you know, these individuals are being groomed, right? It's a financial grooming scam. It's a long-term establishment of a relationship with the victim. They're going to eventually be asked to transfer money out of their bank account or out of their brokerage account. And they're going to be told to tell the bank you're not actually sending it to a cryptocurrency, or you're not, you know, doing it some investment. Tell them it's for, you know, something else, right? Tell them it's for you're buying an investment property or something, you know, reasonable with that amount of cash. So I think that's kind of an important thing to understand. You know, the reason is that money, right, is going to leave. But I think one of the things the banks can really look at is, have you met somebody online recently that's asked you to download a chat app? Because almost all of these scams, the first step is after the text messages, after the LinkedIn message, they want you to download these chat apps. And the research into why they want you to download a chat app is because these scam groups will have four or five people logged into that chat app conversing with the victim over a 24/7 cycle. The reason I said it was exhausting is because just people messaging me all the time, right, as I'm trying to really pretend to be, to pretend that I'm interested in this, engaging with this person. And so it's an exhausting scam because there's four people messaging you at all hours, all the time, pretending to be this one, beautiful person that you've met online.
I don't want to be unreasonable, but it sounds to me as though these scammers are trading on people's cupidity and stupidity. That's harsh, I know. But I've seen reports where financial institutions have directly warned customers, don't do this, it's a scam, and people go ahead and do it anyway.
So I would say that a lot of these victims, right, during the pandemic suffered a lot of loneliness and isolation. And so I think the willingness to believe, for whatever reason, that this person is interested in you is sort of a motivating factor, and that they're asking you to go to legitimate looking apps and legitimate looking websites. They're not asking you for money. They're asking you to invest your money through this, specific cryptocurrency kind of exchange. So there's a lot of things that these victims, even sophisticated victims, I would argue, aren't stupid. They just believe that this seems legitimate, and they have this veneer of legitimacy because people have made money in cryptocurrency, and they've built this relationship, this exhausting relationship, over a very long period of time with someone to convince them, no, I'm not taking your money. I'm going to have you invest that money on behalf, and I'll help you make that money. And what's really interesting is you can get some of that money back, right? So when you do the initial investment, right, in this cryptocurrency, or, when you're sending money through these apps, they're actually going to say, okay, well, let's test it. And you could get if you put in 10,000, they'll send you 5,000 back. And that's actually one of the red flags to look for, is money moving out of the bank, right? Or moving out of this app back into your bank account. It may be less the initial amount. So there's a lot of ways victims who you wouldn't think would be victims fall victim to this scam.
I still want to try and put you on the spot over what people should be doing. And by people, I mean the financial institutions and potential victims. How do I guard my institution? How do I alert my customers? And as a customer, what should I be watching out for?
I think as a bank, right, FinCEN's guidance is quite sound, right? It talks about red flags. I think it's a lot of internal education campaigns for the bank to talk to the tellers, right, where sometimes cash is even leaving, right, the bank, right, where you can take this and deposit it into another ATM machine, right, for cryptocurrency. So there's a lot of ways that these scam organizations are trying to convince victims to part with their money. So I'd encourage any bank to make sure they're aware of the guidance from FinCEN on the various red flags. And those include things like I had mentioned, someone transferring money, a large amount of money out, getting a little bit back, then starting to send it again. There's some really good indicators there. But to me, any fraud comes back to behavioral changes of the customer, right? So as a customer's behavior changes, and that could be that they're sending large wires out or international wires, or they're starting to move money in ways that's inconsistent with how they've always done it. Those are your first indicators of potential fraud. I think that one of the challenges with this type of fraud is, even with all these education campaigns at the bank level, we're only recently starting to see national news on these topics. There was a bunch published over this December, and John Oliver actually just did a segment on it on Last Week Tonight on Sunday. So I got a lot of texts about that. So the conversation is starting to become more mainstream. And so I'd say the banking industry, the financial services industry, is getting some air cover from these shows.
That's good, because normally what happens is it only makes the headlines when it's gone wrong. Now, obviously, it is making headlines because things have gone wrong. People have lost money. People have been scammed. But the level of awareness is growing, and that's got to be a good thing.
It is. And I think on top of the level of awareness that's happening, right, which I think is fairly recent, what I found interesting about the scam, I've been in the financial crimes world for 20 years, but what was interesting was how big it seemed to be and how little coverage it was getting. So I really started to dive in on it. One aspect of the scam is people are being told to lie to their bank, right? Don't tell them why you're taking this money out. And victims are also quite embarrassed. So the numbers that, you know, as the industry kind of sees right through the FBI, and they seem low to a lot of us. And I think that the reason is a lot of people are not reporting this crime due to the embarrassment and the stigma. They feel like they made a really bad mistake, and rather than admit it or report it, they're going to just not say anything. And that's also contributing to maybe why we haven't seen as much attention as, in my view, this issue should have had a year ago.
Richard Graham, Director of KYC and Financial Crime at Moody's Analytics, thank you very much.